Hi, this is Charles Cadenhead from the Desperate Husbands Podcast, keeping you out of the doghouse with your loved ones. And you're listening to a special feature episode of Buffy Between the Lines.
Hello and welcome. I am Mark the Encaffeinated One, proud to bring you the second of the special episodes for Buffy Between the Lines. Episode number 2, Requiem for a Dream, has just shattered raw records and hit the universe, and I am very pleased to be here with three of the people involved with that. I have with me Paula, the writer of, or partial writer of, the episode number 2. Hello, Paula.
Hi. Sorry, you just faded out there for a second, so hi. I'm the writer.
With me as well, I have David, who played Wesley in the episode. Hello, David.
Hello, Mark.
And last, but certainly not least, I think what could be said, the star of this episode, Cliss, who played Tara. Hello, Cliss.
Hello. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, and hope all of you are well as well. Episode 2, Requiem for a Dream. Let's start by just getting a little bit of background on... Sorry, Requiem for a Demon. Thank you very much. It's another movie I'm a fan of. And I'm definitely a fan of this episode. Let's go around here and just find out a little bit more about who you are. Let's start with you, Paula. How did you come to be part of this great and wonderful project called Buffy Between the Lines?
I think it must have been in May or something. I think everybody's probably heard about this by now if you've been listening to the podcast. It's the... it's the infamous live journal post where she was where Tabitha, our esteemed producer, was, you know, I'm interested in making a podcast of a radio style show. Who wants to be on it? And I was just kind of like, well, I used to be a music major. I can sing random stuff and I have a big music library that you could use. And eventually, when we were throwing ideas around, I threw the idea of basically what became this episode out. And then Tabitha was like, oh, well, why don't you write it? And I'm like, okay. Which really, I didn't even come in as planning to be a writer, but I ended up being the writer of this episode, and I was actually really, really glad that I did.
So without any prior expectations, any prior experience at writing?
Yeah, I mean, I'd done some fanfic, but I'd never really finished anything. I mean, it was always, like, really bad Mary Sue stuff that I would just kind of, like, go, oh, my God, and, you know, never publish because it's, you know, bad Mary Sue stuff. Because I don't want to inflict that upon the internet.
And, we're going to go around the table. We'll come back and talk more about how this episode developed, pardon me. But I want to know, David, you're not exactly close in physical location to everyone else. You're coming from Australia, is that correct?
That's right, Sydney, Australia. I first heard about Buffy Between the Lines via Whedon-esque, the website, whedonesque.com. I saw the news posting about the open call for auditions and thought it sounded like fun. I once actually trained as an actor several years ago, and I'm not working in theatre anymore, but I thought it'd be nice to, you know, tread the boards again, even if only in a audio way. So I just sent in some auditions. I auditioned for basically all of the non-American characters, because I can't do an American accent, but I've been brought up watching British television, so you know, I've sort of had British accents just ingrained into me since I was a child. And, they seem to think I was suitable for Wesley, which is great.
Cool. And it demonstrates, again, just how widespread one idea can be, especially among such a rabid fan base, or simply extremely enthusiastic fan base among all of the world. Wesley is an interesting character because his role changed so often during the series, and now you're taking it up in this very transitional period between seasons 5 and 6, am I correct?
Yes, well, seasons 5 and 6 in Buffy, seasons 2 and 3 of Angel. At this point, Wesley, he's sort of he's maturing at this point. He's still got some of the silliness, some of the slapstick Wesley that we all, you know, loved from the beginning. But he's now employing Angel. We've just seen all of them deal with, you know, some very dark times with Darla and Drusilla and Angel, you know, turning evil without actually becoming Angelus. So it's at this point that Wesley's really coming to terms with just the responsibility of what it really means to fight on the side of the right, to fight the good fight, as he says.
Wesley is also interesting in that he's one of the few characters that has a very brave front half of the time, and the other half of the time is a complete fool. That's a very interesting line to play, and I'd like to say that I found that your performance of Wesley was very convincing, actually.
Thank you.
I was very pleased with that.
It was great fun.
Did you find an interesting challenge to find that?
It was an interesting challenge in that it's. I'm sure it's difficult for everybody who's playing one of the main characters from the series, because there's that balance between imitating the original character but also creating your own performance. Later in the series, I also play a small role. I get to play a vampire later on, which in a way is a lot easier because I don't need to worry about pretending to sound like anybody else.
That would be one of the most challenging parts is to try to capture the role without having to parody the role by accident.
Yes, that's right. I can't listen to myself after I've recorded the role of Wesley, because to myself I just sound like a bad imitation, like I'm almost like I'm making fun of the original actor. But yeah, there's only so much we can do without actually having the original actors in the show.
And I think one of the things that comes across here is, while you're not necessarily the original actors, actually none of you are the original actors, I should say, you're all fans of the show, and I think that passion comes across very clearly.
Oh yes, certainly. We've got this chat room in Skype, which is for all the actors and the writers just to chat while they've got nothing else to do. And the amount of Buffy discussion that goes on, we could probably write entire new episodes just from our conversations in the chat room. We love these shows. We love pretty much everything written by Joss Whedon. So it's exciting to be involved in a project like this, when there is so much passion, so much excitement. The amount of work that people are putting into this, especially the writers and the editors, is tremendous. And I can't imagine they'd be able to get it done if it weren't for the fact that they love these shows so much.
And I'm sure I have some indication that this first season is not going to be the end of Buffy Behind or Between the Lines, and I'm sure we'll be seeing much more of those episodes coming down in the future. This is a very special episode, though, too. Episode number two, because it highlights a character who got a little bit of a short shrift, I think, personally, not because of negative intent on Joss Whedon, just simply because he has a large cast of characters. But, Cliss, how did you feel about taking up the role of Tara, and specifically this episode where Tara becomes essentially the center point in which at least half of the episode quite heavily revolves?
Well, I'm just honored that I get to play Tara. I mean, I've been obsessed with the show for so long now, and one of my favorite characters was Tara. And I mean, when I auditioned, I didn't think I was going to get it. I tried it and everything, and I was like, you know, if I get a part, that's cool. And then I got Tara, and I was just so happy.
Had you auditioned for Tara initially?
I tried out for, I think, Tara, Faith, and another original character. And because I was listening to Strangely Literal, that's how I found out about Buffy Between the Lines, on my car with a friend on my way home from work. And they were talking about auditioning for this thing called Buffy Between the Lines. And my friend's like, oh, you should definitely do this. You're obsessed with this show, and you love everything about it. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it a shot. And so I just auditioned, and I got Tara.
And how did you prepare for this role? Did you go back and watch all the episodes, or did you try to just focus on the essence of the character and try to just read the lines in front of you?
Well, I'm kind of really... I watch the shows all the time, basically. I was watching season 5 when they started talking about the auditions and everything, so I was just lucky, and then I started, watching everything that Tara does and all her like dictations and everything. And I didn't try to copy it. I just tried to like make it my own as well. So I guess it worked.
Well, I'll say it was definitely an interesting performance. And I look forward to hearing more from Tara throughout the series.
Yeah, me too.
Now, Paula, you're responsible for this episode in more than one way, right? Because you're not only the person who wrote most of it, primarily the Sunnydale parts, which is a large portion of it, but I understand you're also the person who put this episode together, physically put it together. Is that right?
Yeah, I put a good chunk of, Kim, our another one of the producers, does the final edit, but I did a lot of the really important scenes that were kind of music related because I had been in choir for a long time, basically since third grade, and I'm a fifth year college student now, and I knew how a choir runs, how that sound and that feeling is. So I did most of those scenes because, I mean, unless you've honestly been in that kind of situation, it's really hard to describe that kind of just the feeling, the daily life, the way that it's just a way of life for people.
And this is a massive ensemble production, not only because, well, you were one of the editors, I understand there were other editors and other writers, as there are for, I think, every episode. Is not just a, there's a huge group of people working on every episode, is that correct?
Yes, there is. Most of the time the scenes get editors, like I'm actually doing one scene of episode 3, editing two scenes of episode 4, one scene of episode 5, just that I could think of off the top of my head.
Now, when did you start working on this episode?
Let's see, probably around May, I think, is when we were throwing ideas around, and it was, you know, I want the first draft by June or July, and I'm like, okay, and that's what we did.
So first draft of June and July, and started recording approximately?
Oh, man. I don't know. I've lost track. I've been I don't know. I think one of the actors would be better for that, because I just kind of have been editing as they come along.
Well, let's turn the question over then. David, when did you start recording your lines for the episode?
Yeah, I can't remember precisely. I'm sure it's very helpful. Ask Cliff, she might remember.
You know what? I can't remember either.
Obviously, the experience was a little traumatic at the time, and you're trying to suppress slightly the experience. Obviously, the end product, though, turned out very good, and that's actually another testament to how much passion has been behind this, that despite this huge cast, despite this huge number of people involved, it's turning out very well, and I'm really pleased to see that. In this episode, we did hear a bit of singing. Now,
yes,
Paula, you definitely were expecting the singing because you wrote the episode, and it comes out of your own singing experience. Cliss, are you expecting singing when you signed up for this?
No, I wasn't. I was actually dreading the singing. I saw the title for Requiem for a Demon, and I was like, oh my god, hopefully I don't get to sing. But, you know, then I read the script, I was like, okay, whew.
Did you sing during the episode? I don't remember exactly if it was specifically Tara, or just one of the voices.
Thankfully, I didn't. I just had to chant for the spell, but that was it.
So, Paula, was that just you singing 4 or 5 times together?
That was, well, the first episode, the opener, that was actually that was cast, and we ended up drawing a very good singer out of that from the internet who's a fan. And the grandpa song, which came later, that was actually 3 of my friends around a friend's somewhat, that was me and 3 of my friends around a out-of-tune piano. And we just sang the song because the episode was due in a couple of days and I couldn't get anybody else to do it. So it ended up, like, I had known that I needed that thing for a while and I just couldn't figure out how to get it done. So I bribed a bunch of my friends.
Well, I mean, that's one of the difficulties here. Although the internet is making this possible because it's enabling people from all over the world to get together and collaborate, it's not quite good enough yet to hold a three group a cappella song together, I don't think, or a three person. It doesn't quite have the synchronicity necessary for that, I don't think. So I was wondering how that was done, if that was actually done in person. In this episode, we actually had, Tara almost singing. We had you and your paid drunken friends singing, but actually we had Anya singing. Now, was that in the original script, or was that an opportunistic decision? That was in the original script.
That was in the original script because I got to the end of the episode and I'm like, how am I gonna do this? It's like, because I realized, like, I knew who my enemy was gonna be. I knew how that they were all gonna end up in the choir room, you know, in the practice. No, that it was just a regular classroom, you know, trying to figure out how to do it. And I was like, how are they gonna pull this spell out of thin air to get rid of this creature? And I realized that probably the same thing that Joss has done a few times, that Anya is a great source of random things. So that's why I made up that little song, gave it to Anya, and had Giles do the history dork thing, and all of a sudden, bam, we've defeated the monster. And that was honestly where that came from, because that was a last minute, how am I going to do this?
I've got to say, too, you touched on something there, in that Joss Whedon is extremely well known for having such incredible dialogue between his characters. And in an audio form, such as what this has taken, it's all dialogue, pretty much, except for those incredible sound effects. Now, did you find... what was the feeling of being able to play around with, say, some of Xander's lines and give something to Giles and give something... What was that feeling like to you?
Oh, it was great. It was wonderful. Like, some of Xander's lines, I loved being able to give him the tree line, and our Xander ended up taking that to a height that I didn't even think they were going to take it there. I just stuck that in because I thought it was kind of funny to hear Xander saying that he fell out of a tree. I didn't realize that he was going to make that the punchline that he did. It was a lot of fun, and one of my original fandoms was West Wing, and then I discovered Buffy Between the Lines, so I've always been in that kind of a fandom where it's all about the dialogue. So this was just kind of a natural... It was so much fun to do, honestly.
Now, dialogue, as a word, is different from monologue. It implies that there's more than one person speaking back and forth. But obviously, you guys aren't talking to each other immediately, right?
Well,
yes. What? I'm sorry.
I can answer that if you want. For some of our scenes, they actually lined it up so that we are actually all speaking to each other. Rearranged times where we could all meet up over Skype and just record through some of the trickier group scenes. Some of our lines were still recorded individually, but just doing some of the more complicated scenes together was really great, just for feeding off each other's performances, and it was heaps of fun too, just chatting with these, you know, complete geeks from across the world and realizing how much we had in common. We wasted a lot of time though.
Yeah, not to mention, yeah, we did, because apparently I can't do proper voices because I was in reading for our Willow, because our Willow couldn't be there, and I kept making everyone laugh, and it was just bad.
It wasn't you, Paula. We were just laughing at everything.
Yeah, that too.
In these group scenes, how many people would be together at once, for example? David?
I think we had maybe five or six of us doing the LA stuff. But I think some of the groups are larger than that.
Five or six in one scene gives some sense of just how big this is. It's not a show where you have one or two voices happening at the same time. It really is about the ensemble casts, which it was in the original case as well. And it's nice to see that you had some way of accommodating that instant reaction as well, because the reactions do play off each other very well. Now, I've got to ask about the phone calls. Now, the version I've heard of the episode might have been a little bit of the early edit, but the phone calls have both sides of the conversation, although one side has been very much diminished. How did that work? Did you actually have them talking at the same time and then just simply remove one of them? I'm not clearly hearing the other voices, so perhaps they aren't really saying it? Is it really just... Ma 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 ma. Paula?
Yeah, well, I can say that as the writer, those phone calls really weren't scripted except for the one side, because originally someone else was working on the LA side of the story, and there's a long story as to what happened with that, but I didn't exactly know what Willow needed to be saying to Tara, so I just kind of had Tara, you know what? Okay, honey, yeah, I'll feed the cat. You know, it was that kind of stuff to where I knew that she was going to be calling them, and I knew that it was that needed to be done, but I figured that we'd deal with it when it got to the end. So that was never scripted, so I'm pretty sure that that's just someone, one of the editors did or something like that with, you know, the played with the knobbies, essentially, and made it work.
In this process, it's truly collaborative. I mean, we've talked about some people doing writing, some people doing editing, some people doing the voices, some people doing this and that. But, oh, we've just lost Paula. Leading up to my brilliant questions. And
sorry.
Just
okay, so we're back. Thank God.
Welcome back.
Well, now I'm just going to throw that question out because I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. Let me see if I can get that back.
Happens all the time.
I'm
going
to have to take a sip of my coffee. Pardon me. I just need to. There. I'm re-energized now. In this collaborative process, although some people have different hats to wear, I think that you come together probably more often than not. And it becomes a compromise between you. Now, were there compromises between the writing and the acting? You've already said that the phone calls weren't really scripted, but is there more give and take in some of the other lines that people have given, for example? Paul, you want to address that initially?
A lot of the lines were done way differently than I'd imagined them, which I suppose is just something that happens when you're the writer, and at least in my head, like I saw it, like with the original actors, because I had no clue who these people were going to be when I was writing this. So I, you know, actually imagined Nick Brendan delivering all these lines and, you know, that whole crew doing it. And so there has been some give and take, but most of it is, while different, it's not bad. And a few jokes have had to be dropped, a few things that I wrote have had to be changed, and it's just part of the collaborative process.
Cliss, when doing Tara, did you find that there was something in that character that you had to bring to it? I mean, did you really try to embody that character and bring something maybe that wasn't quite there on the paper?
Oh, yeah. I mean, after I saw the script and it was mostly all Tara, I just started watching all the episodes with Tara on it just so I could, you know, really get down to it. And I think I did. I mean, Paula, did I?
Yeah, I think you did. I think you did a good job, especially like with the stuttering, because half of her stuttering's not written in.
I was wondering about that.
I'm going to write every single stuttering that she's going to do.
I was wondering about that. There's a very specific pattern that Tara has.
Most of her stuttering isn't written in. Most of that is Cliss being Tara and Tara stuttering when she thinks she needs to stutter.
Yeah, I had to really work on that stutter because I never stutter, so.
And David, when doing Wesley, how did you approach the line? Did you find that you needed to take some of them in your hands, or were you kind of looking at it going, okay, must think like Wesley. What would Wesley do right now?
Well, there's a sense in that, you know, you're imitating the character, but there's a simple fact that you're reading lines which, you know, Wesley has never actually said before because they weren't in the show, so you have to bring something new to it. But at the same time, full credit goes to the writers for actually writing lines which sound like the characters. They've done a great job of really understanding how the characters speak, just the rhythm of their speech patterns. They've done a brilliant job of making our jobs as actors just so much easier. Because we really do feel like the characters.
And my brilliant question may be run into steam again. I'm so sorry. There's a certain problem I'm having right now. In some ways, I can't figure out the next question to ask more than which question to ask. Because this series has reinvigorated my interest in Buffy. I've been a Buffy fan. I've been a fan of just about everything Joss Whedon has done. The things I'm not a fan of, I probably haven't read yet or seen yet. And one of the things that really excites me about this series is that you're bringing that fan passion, which has been very well known for a long time. Joss Whedon's works haven't lain fallow, if you will. They've blossomed into new stories and new things from everybody's minds. And one of the things that makes me really excited is you guys are really taking this strongly and really taking this seriously. And it's an enormous effort, and I really should think that anybody who hears this should really applaud you for the things you're doing. Now, have you recorded all of these first season already, or are you still recording as the episodes are being released? Paula, can you tell me that?
As of this point, we're in the process of recording episode six. I know that, well, one's obviously done. Two's obviously been completely recorded. It's as of the time of this recording, as we're doing it right now, I believe three's almost done, four's being edited, five's being edited, six is being recorded, and I think we're getting ready to start seven. So things will probably change by the time it's actually aired, but as of this point during the recording, that's where we are.
And you've already done some recording of these episodes, and you've already bring these. And there's no shortage of ideas. You've already said that there's no way that you'll run out of ideas. Now, is there? I don't want you to spoil anything because I personally can't stand spoilers. But is there an arc to this season? I mean, we know where it begins and we know where it ends, but do you have an arc that's in between there, like a season-long story?
Yes, there will be one. The very end of my episode is, let's just say that it's important, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay, nicely vague, but sufficient to give us, to whet our appetites, and I like that. I had a question. You people are all just making me too nervous. It's too exciting for me. How about time for a bit more behind the scenes? Is there a particular line or scene which you either felt was so difficult initially to do, but very much worth it, or something which happened during that scene? Let's start this round with Kliss and doing Tara.
Oh, good. which scenes? I think basically all the scenes with Candace, which is Laura. Laura's the girl who plays Candace. Those were so difficult to get through because we were laughing so hard. I mean, Paula can vouch for that. I think she almost wanted to kill us. So props to her for not killing us. It was the most hilarious thing. No, it was the funniest thing. It was the funniest and most hilarious.
After they were done recording, I hung up on them, and they talked for like 4 hours afterwards.
Yeah, we clicked. I mean, me and Laura, we just clicked, and we talked until like probably 3 a.m.
So we can expect more from those two characters in the future, whether or not it's written or not.
Hopefully, yes.
David, what stands out for you in what you've done with Wesley so far? Now, I want to limit this to kind of the first couple of episodes, just because we don't want to give away the whole game here.
Well, simply just, I think that just the fun of being involved in the group recording sessions, as I said before, it adds so much to it when you're bouncing off other actors. And also just meeting up and chatting with other fans. But possibly what stands out in my mind the most is that when we did the group recording session for the scenes in LA, it took forever. I think about 2 hours long or something like that, because each of us was having so much trouble concentrating because we were just enjoying each other's company so much. And poor Tabs was going insane just trying to get it done. But it was a really good time.
So you're getting to play in the backyard of Joss Whedon. No small backyard, you might say. And that's got to be really kind of fun to kind of take these characters and make them around. Is there any fear that you're having too much fun with the characters? Paula, as a writer, do you have a little bit of nervousness when it comes to writing these scenes?
I know my biggest fear with this was that, I mean, we're kind of taking Tara a little bit off of the canon path. I mean, it's not exactly... I mean, it's not like it goes against canon, but we're kind of saying, oh, she used to be in choir in college, and then at some point she decided not to be, or something. And that's one thing that I was probably most nervous about, was that's when Tabs suggested that I make Tara the choir person, I was thinking, oh, it'll just be the choir demon, and, you know, we'll have someone stumble into choir and discover it. I didn't think that we were going to be doing it as a Scooby in choir, and... That's the one thing that's honestly got me the most nervous about, because I'm a little afraid of how it's going to be accepted, is whether or not people are going to be okay with Tara being a choir dork.
I don't think that's going to be a major problem in her character, but it depends. Maybe this becomes the most influential thing in her future, in future episodes. That'll be interesting to see. I like the highlight, actually, of Tara. I started out this discussion kind of saying that I felt that that character got a little bit of a short shrift just because there was so much going on. And I am glad to see that character come out a bit more in the forefront. Now, I do have to ask, however, given that we have this sudden deeper musical element to this, and in season 6, we did have a musical episode. Is there a musical episode planned for Buffy Between the Lines?
You know what? I don't know. It's been floated around on the little chat room like, oh, we should do a musical episode. We should do a musical episode. But I don't think it's gotten any farther than that.
I wish we could do a musical episode of Angel. I think that would be fun. Once more with Soul.
As long as it doesn't turn into cop rock, I think we'll be... I'm hoping that we will actually see this in the future. I think that was a stroke of genius to take out this series and move it to a different level. And I see a little bit of that coming back. Well, I think we're going to have to let the people at home have the mysteries and not be able to answer all the questions they probably have, and certainly not answer all the questions that I know I have and have been struggling with each other. My questions have been fighting themselves, trying to figure out which one would be on top. But I do want to thank Kliss, who played Tara.
Thank you.
I want to thank Paula, one of the writers responsible and one of the editors responsible for the episode 2, Requiem for a Demon.
Thank you.
And I want to thank David for putting up with this intercontinental chat, and also for doing such a great performance so far from what I've heard of Wesley, and I'm looking forward to more good performances of that in the future. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you.
And I would be remiss if I didn't thank Tabs. I bugged her constantly for about 2 days on Twitter, saying, is there anything you can have me do? I'd love to do something. I'm so enthusiastic about this. I originally was going to try out for a role, and I thought, no, I probably shouldn't. I don't want to subject my voice too far on everyone. It's already on there way too much. But I'm really happy to see this whole thing go through, and I'm looking forward rabidly. I'm watching my podcatcher every day to see when the new episodes come down, hoping that just they might come down 5 minutes earlier than I expected. So thank you all very much. This has been Mark the Encaffeinated One on Buffy Between the Lines, special episode after number 2, Requiem for a Demon. If you want to find out more about me, well, I'll drop my couple of lines here. I am the host of The Weird Show, found at encaffeinated.ca, and I'm also a co-host or part-time helper on The Ninth Heroes Cast at heroescast.com. And Kliss, do you have anything you want to promote? Podcasts?
Just keep checking on Buffy Between the Lines.
Paula?
Just keep checking Buffy Between the Lines. I don't really do a podcast.
Yeah, me neither.
And David?
Can I mention my webcomic?
Sure.
www.crimsondark.com. That's what I do when I'm not doing Buffy, but keep checking out Buffy Between the Lines because it's, you know, what we're actually talking about today.
And I agree with that completely, wholeheartedly. Keep checking it out. Thanks very much, folks. Have a good one.
Okay, so it starts with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Claire Kramer, who played Glory on Buffy, played Alex in the True Calling episode Drop Dead Gorgeous. True Calling, of course, stars Eliza Dushku, who was looking hot in the music vid to Nickelback's Rockstar, alongside Billy Gibbons, who played Angela's dad on Bones. You know, the show that Angel's on now? So anyways, David Boreanaz was in These Girls with Caroline DeVernos, who played Jay on Wonderfalls. You know, Jay, she dated the guy who was married to the girl played by Jewel Sate, and she was such a hoe, so now every time I watch that, I have to go watcher is Kaylee on Firefly, which also stars Nathan Fillion, who's now on Desperate Housewives playing Adam Mayfair. And you know that lady on Wisteria Lane, Karen McCluskey, played by Katherine Justin, who played Genevieve Holt in the Buffy episode Where the Wild Things Are. Follow me? Good. If you're a fan of Buffy, Angel, Bones, or Desperate Housewives, check out ADFD, Attention Deficit Fandom Disorder, and follow reviews of new episodes, comics, and anything else connected to these four shows, and some special episodes like holiday episodes, and episodes focusing on the works of cool people like Joss Whedon, Tim Burton, and Christopher Moore. Check us out at adfd.mypodcast.com.
This episode was produced and edited by Tabitha Grace Smith. Theme song for Buffy Between the Lines by the band Beatnik Turtle. Visit them at beatnikturtle.com. End credit music is Stark Love by the band Mercy Machine, brought to you by Magnatune.com. Visit the band's website at mercymachine.com. Our cast for this episode consists of Gwendolyn Jensen Woodard as the announcer, Mark, the Encaffeinated One from the podcast The Weird Show. You can find The Weird Show at encaffeinated.ca. Also featuring Cliss, who plays Tara, David Simon, who plays Wesley Wyndham Price, and Paula Ratto, one of the writers for episode 2. All characters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel are copyrighted by Joss Whedon, Mutant Enemy, and the respective copyright owners. This podcast is purely for entertainment and parody purposes. Buffy Between the Lines is a combined international effort and is not affiliated in any way with Joss Whedon. Stay tuned for our next episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at buffybetweenthelines@gmail.com or call our voicemail line 206-495-6560. Your long-distance charges may apply. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review at iTunes, Podcast Pickle, or Podcast Alley.
And
woohoo!